Good morning. The House Education Committee will come to order. The time is 8:07 on March 27th. Today is a significant day because I was here during the earthquake, so whenever I hear March 27th, I'm sorry. Today we are joined by Representative Ledoux, Representative Drummond, Representative Sadler, Representative Peggy Wilson, myself, Representative Gaddis, Representative Reinbold, and Representative Seaton. On our agenda today, we'll be hearing a backup. We'll be continuing with House Bill 162 and hearing House Bill 31. Firstly, we'll begin with House Bill 162, and if we can get the bill sponsor to come forward and just kind of quickly reintroduce the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Representative Tammy Wilson. I represent District 2. And quickly, what this does is that it takes the period that before a teacher can get tenure from 3 years to 5. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anyone here from the department that would like to speak to the bill? There's nobody here. Well, we're moving right along. Public testimony. We closed public testimony last time. I do have one person signed up from the Kenai LIO. We did hear from this person last time. And we have one that we also heard from in the MATSU. So since we've got the same people for the same bill, we'll kind of move along since we did close public testimony and move on. Does the committee have any comments, suggestions? Where do we want to go?
Member
Representative Seaton.
I'd like to offer an amendment, and that amendment would be I'd like to change the order if we could, and 28LS06/A.2 would be amendment number one.
Okay. And does everybody have a copy of this amendment?
Mm-hmm.
Continue on.
I object for discussion.
Thank you, ma'am. And for the record, I had move the amendment. So, in case I didn't
for the record, the amendment has been moved. Thank you.
Madam Chair, this amendment reflects testimony that we had, and that was that going to 5 years was going to be problematic you couldn't get tenure until 5 years because two things. One was that if a district had a really good teachers and they wanted to offer them tenure at 3 years, they should be allowed to offer them tenure at 3 years. Because in some cases, if you are not offering tenure, people are not going to be, they're not going to be secure in their job. They might move on and you want to keep those teachers. So part of the testimony we had, they should be allowed to offer tenure at 3 years. But they wouldn't be required to offer tenure until after a fourth year. So that's what this amendment does. The discussion that we had was 5 years keeps teachers, possibly ineffective teachers, on improvement plans for an additional 2 years. Supervision by the school district should allow them with an additional year to decide whether they want to keep those teachers or not. And so what this does, it provides the two things. One is it allows districts to offer tenure to a teacher after the third year when they start their fourth year, as it is currently, but it requires that they don't have to offer tenure until after a fourth year and they sign a contract for a fifth year. So that's Amendment A.2.
Representative Sadler.
I'd just like to ask your indulgence to have a minute or two to read the language of the amendment.
Sorry, say again?
We have a few minutes to read the language of the amendment. There's 3 to 4 pages. I just want to make sure you can read it thoroughly.
Shall we take a brief at ease? the record, having read amendment number one, and we'll have the Representative Seaton, if you can give us an overview of amendment number one, especially for those listening in the audience.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. And really, you know, the section one and actually section two are talking about, those are basically existing with federal agency certifications and transfers from federal schools. The section three is where the real...
Section three, Representative Seaton, referring to sections of the amendment? Or
yes, section three of the amendment, starting on page one, line 21. And if you then turn to page two, you will see that we're modifying the existing law from 3 years to 4 years. So the requirement will be is if they teach 4 years and are offered a contract for the fifth year, then they would receive tenure. However, they are allowed to offer them tenure at 3 years, as it currently is. So there's the two parts of this is that they can be allowed at 3 years to offer tenure, and if they want to keep the teachers on a improvement plan or evaluate them for an additional year, then that's through the fourth year. And if they decide to keep them and offer them a contract for the fifth year, then they would receive tenure at that time. And that's a school district choice, just like it is right now. But this, that's the shall portion. And right now, it's if you keep them for 3 years and offer them a contract and they teach one day in the fourth year, then they have tenure. This says you have a fourth year to evaluate the person. If you offer them a contract in their fifth year and they accept it and teach, then they have tenure after. So it extends it to four years, the mandatory. But it also gives the district the option of giving people tenure at 3 years.
Madam Chairman?
Mm-hmm. Representative Wilson.
You know, I don't see any reason for us to keep in statute the Section 1 and 2 since we don't have any federal schools anymore. Is there a reason that we are keeping that in statute anyway?
And it is my understanding that we're getting the drafter online, but maybe we can get to have the bill sponsor, who I think has done a little research on this, and maybe explain, not only for our sake, but for those listening, what those sections relate to.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair, Representative Wilson, Section 1 is the one that refers to the federal agency, not Section 2. So absolutely, Section 1 talks about federal agencies and the transfer of what's going on. Section 2 of the bill that I brought forth on here is where we have changed, requires the 10-year from three, changes it from three to five.
Go Madam ahead. Chair, well, in Section 2 of the amendment, in Section 2 of the amendment, Section 2 mentions federal agency also.
I'll look at my own.
Madam Chair.
Representative Seaton.
Section 2 is identical to the original bill, Section 1.
Correct.
Okay. But when we were drafting the amendment, Section 1 goes in and, you know, deletes some parts and reinserts a deletion that was in the original bill. So the bill drafter can tell us why they've set in Section 1 there, but it's just because of the amendment process, because we're changing another portion of the bill, and so it's putting back in the deletion that was made in the original bill, because we need to delete from the existing law, which is what is done in the bill.
Okay.
So Section 1, yeah, hopefully the bill drafter is online.
Okay, yeah, we'll spare you. We do have the bill drafter online. Dan Wayne, are you there?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Ann Wayne.
And I'm not sure if you've heard some of the conversation this morning, but most of it is revolving around the federal agencies and the reason that they're in or not there, or should they continue, that type of conversation. Can you speak to that, please?
Well, if there is still a possibility of transfer to federal agency schools, then the statute AS 1420.47 probably needs to be amended to form the bill. It is actually the bill doesn't amend it. The Amendment A2 that we're talking about probably should say, on line 2, should probably say the teacher taught four or more years. That would be consistent with the rest of Amendment 2, which sets up a four-year.
Just a moment, please. Representative Wilson.
Dan, what my question was, are there any federal schools in Alaska? Number one, that's my first question. Just say yes or no if you can, if you know the answer to that.
The answer is I don't know. I apologize, but I don't know that.
Is there anybody in the, please. Can I ask if there's anybody?
You certainly can.
Is there anybody in the audience that would know the answer to that?
It doesn't look like we have the department here, so.
I'm pretty sure we don't.
Representative Tammy Wilson.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we were told by Senator Cockell's office that there were no longer any BIA schools.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there isn't. And so what I'm, you know, we can see how confusing this is right here, just for us right here. And I'm thinking that we should divide the amendment and vote on the, I think we should delete the AS 1420.147, because that has to do with BIA schools, and we don't have any of them. So why not just delete them out of statute? And that's my thought process, so that we just do away with that. And then we can proceed with something else. But now I could be wrong on that, so if, and what we can do is we can just divide and treat this as if it was two different amendments. We could divide the amendment so that we're not dealing with one part and then deal with the other part.
Let's ask the bill sponsor, Representative Tammy Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair, Representative Wilson, I think that the idea would be I could work with your office on the amend part of that. I think we probably should do a double check just to make sure that there's no potential for that, as the bill drafter had said, even though there may not be some now. That's an amendment that would be pretty much a cleanup to take out any kind of federal. But I would hate to see you do that and then all of a sudden find out maybe there's one that none of us were aware of.
Okay.
But we can take care of that portion of it if that's the will of the committee.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Seem to be any objection to that.
So, Dan, just so that that part of the bill is a little confusing to me, but I just want to know for sure what this does is says that currently in statute right now they have tenure after 3 years. And all this amendment is doing is putting it, saying that we can give them tenure after 3 years, or we can wait till the next year. And after that next year, at the end of the fourth year, if we offer them a contract for the next year, it's automatically tenure. Is that correct?
I think that's correct.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux.
I just want to make sure that if we're thinking around with this and taking out the BIA schools.
No, we're not going to do that.
Pardon me? No, but if we're thinking about that, the BIA schools in the first paragraph, I think this federal agency goes all through this section, and so it's going to have to be conformed to that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the bill sponsor indicated, that, you know, they can go back and clean that section out. So good point. Are there any other questions or comments in regards to this particular amendment? Representative Ledoux.
I guess I'd like to know how the sponsor of this bill feels about this amendment.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, and first of all, I want to make sure people are clear. Right now, you have to teach, by what I brought forward, from the fifth year, you would not get your contract till the sixth year. I want to make sure there's not a confusion. And what this does is that we had testimony the other day talking about may on three, must on five. I actually talked to my own superintendent and some other superintendents about, you know, how they felt about doing this, because at the time it really sounded like it would be kind of a win-win. After speaking with them, they were very concerned of the pressure that might be put on them to do the third year, because I also want to make sure that we're not confusing the improvement plans. Those improvement plans are done once you have tenure, not when you're necessarily in the beginning years. They could be if they wanted, but when we're talking about improvement plans, that's usually to keep your tenure once you have tenure, that process goes along. I will do the will of the committee, but for me, I think we're trying to make a point of the 5 years and why 5 years is important, and making it so that, you know, teachers can have those extra years to do it. And as far as protecting other teachers, I know for the Fairbanks North Star Borough, within their own contracts, they actually do a lot of protection within their contracts, to where they can't just after the end of a second year or a third year or fourth year just say, I'm not hiring that teacher back. They have to have reasons for that, and the protections are actually done in their contracts. And I don't know whether other districts do the same thing. I could just tell you what I know about the Fairbanks North Star Borough. But I really prefer the 5 years. We did our research and felt that that was the point we wanted to go with.
Thank you.
Representative Seaton.
And in discussions, you know, my concern is that extending this out does two things. One, that's a limbo of, you know, we did have testimony, I believe, from teachers of, well, they're not going to buy a house, they're not going to be setting up really officially in the community until they know that they have some kind of job security. But the other portion of this is that we're not putting any supervision necessity on the districts. If they have an additional year to supervise and make sure a teacher is someone they want to keep, that's, you know, that gives some flexibility. But to go an additional 2 years, what that's going to mean is there's never going to be that decision to fish or cut bait. You can easily have teachers, well, maybe we'll give another year. If a district hasn't determined after 4 years that they have someone that they've supervised and that they know will be a good teacher and a mesh and a fit into their community, then they're not doing their job. And just putting it off and saying, well, you can wait another year, means that the supervision and the decision-making process just gets put off. And if we do have ineffective teachers, we're keeping them in there for an additional year. So the purpose of this amendment is to give districts more flexibility, give them an additional year that they don't have to give tenure, but not take away the determination where they have to make a determination at some point in time, yes, this is a good fit or this is not a good fit. And so that's why the amendment was offered with extension of 1 year to 4 years.
And even though we had closed public testimony, but we do have this amendment, and we did have school districts come forth and ask for this help. I do have one school district online, and I'd like to have them comment on how this helps or potentially hinders from that idea. So hopefully, Catherine Gardner, are you still online?
I'm still here.
And just a moment, I'd like to open up public testimony again so we can hear your public testimony.
Okay, thank you. For the record, my name is Catherine Gardner. I'm the community director for the Mexico Borough School District, and I'm speaking to you today on behalf of the school district. I was present to answer any questions that you had. You provided some extensive testimony last time, but in regard to the amendment and what is being considered, Tenure really has two effects, and I'd like to make sure that the committee understands that there are two ways where tenure really has an impact on school district. It's not just in terms of considering a teacher's performance and whether they should continue as a teacher or not, but tenure also has a pretty significant impact when we're talking about layoffs. And when you're looking at a school district's budget where between 80 and 90% of that budget is staff, if we have a shortfall from year to year, we really need flexibility in being able to reduce staff if that's the only means by which we can balance our budget. And when you have teachers that are tenured, you don't have an ability to issue them notice of layoff. And so what it means is that we may have teachers who are not the best fit for our programs, or we may have made changes to programs. We're still going to have to continue to employ those teachers, whether the program or the actual position is intending to exist in the future or not. So tenure is more than just making a determination on someone's overall performance, but the layoff component of this is also significant, particularly in that school district. I also just wanted to quickly comment, I understand the concerns that have been raised about districts putting off the decision and keeping in teachers in the classroom, and I just want to assure you that that's not our intention with having additional time to evaluate. It's not a matter of saying that this teacher is ineffective, let's give them a little bit of time. It's giving us an opportunity to say this teacher made significant growth, and we just want to make sure that that growth is going to be lasting before we effectively give them tenure and have they have a position basically for their life, with the three very limited exceptions that we've already talked about. So I'm happy to answer any other questions that you have, but those are really kind of my thoughts in that. So we would advocate that the committee still consider the 5-year tenure timeline.
Thank you, Catherine. We do have a couple questions, so Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It may be that I'm tired and grumpy, but with the speed of your locution and your proximity to the microphone, I didn't take anything worthwhile from your testimony. I couldn't hear you. I really apologize.
And Catherine, you may have spoken a little fast for us early in the morning without our full cups of coffee. So what I think I'm hearing Representative Sadler say is, could you say that again slower?
I will do my best. I apologize. Actually, I'm at home this morning, sick, so I'm sure that my voice is probably contributing to the difficulty in you hearing and understanding me clearly. I will do my best to summarize very quickly so as not to take too much of your time. Before I do, can you hear me better?
Perfect.
Okay. The Master School District would advocate that you still consider the 5-year tenure timeline. Really, that's for two primary reasons. The first is that tenure affects more than just our ability to non-retain a tenured teacher because they're not
performing. Katie,
yes.
I don't know if you're in cell hell, but you're not coming in very clearly, so can you try it again?
Yes, I'm on the line, so I apologize. I'm not sure what I can do to
communicate.
Yeah, Katie, you're still kind of garbled. Can you try it until we say you're doing well?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Perfect. Perfect.
Do my best to speak clearly.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Tenure for us is really twofold. One is the issue you've discussed regarding...
Katie, you did real well, and it's really not your voice, it's the line, and I know you said you're on a landline, so it must be what's coming in here, but at the end, you're garbled once you start speaking, so let's try it again.
Okay, I'll try to hold the phone a little bit farther from my face, Is this any better?
Perfect.
Okay. Tenure is twofold for us. First is what you've discussed in being able to remove a teacher for poor performance. The other relates to being able to lay off when we are faced with budget restrictions. And the Matsu School District really has no ability to lay off tenured teachers. So by extending this timeline to 5 years, you provide us with additional flexibility in coming up with a balanced budget. The other point that I made previously was that our intention is not to allow for ineffective teachers to remain in the classroom longer, but to require that teachers who have shown progress and shown growth, that continues.
Katie,
over a longer period of time,
Katie, you were real.
That they are quality teachers.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you are garbled again. Representative Wilson.
Katie, it might even be just that you turned your head a different way. If you can, once we get you, we hear you just fine, and then all at once, we can't. And I think it might be if you just turned your head a different way or stepped a different step or something. So can, let's try it again.
A second. Well, I apologize, and I don't want to take up more of the committee's time.
Keep going. Great.
Okay. Did you hear the first point about our ability to lay off?
We did hear the first point, and now you've kind of gone garbled again. So I certainly don't know, and I know you said you're on a landline, so... Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to learn more about this amendment and the additional one that Representative Seaton may be offering, but I think it's a significant enough change from the original bill, and we had a whole lot of testimony the other day when this bill was first brought before us. I really think that school districts need another opportunity to look at this. I think this is a significant enough change that will give Ms. Gardner time to get better and get more input from the people that this affects. If this could be perhaps noticed. There's nobody in the room from the department. I think it would be valuable to have more input before considering this further. Thank you.
And I think we're just trying to still understand the consequences of these amendments. So since we do have time, we'll try to go through these amendments and see what we know and utilize at least we do have one school district online that can kind of tell us that at this time.
Madam Chair.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We can't really... I mean, we've talked about this the other day. We actually talked about these amendments the other day. And there's not a way that we can put online something until it's been introduced into the committee. And I don't think we can put amendments online. I'm not sure. So I would just like to continue the discussion. And I would like to see if somebody could call the department and get the department over here.
I think that that'll be great help for us if we can get the department. At the same time, I'm still trying to understand both amendments and how the amendments are what we spoke about last time. And I'm really not grasping how both of them make that connection. So,
Manager.
Representative Seaton.
Just a suggestion, we could either table this amendment at this time, and so it would still be before us, we could bring it up, or if we wanted to continue discussion, and then I could withdraw the amendment until we're ready to consider it, we could do either one and then take up the other amendment. But probably the easiest thing is to continue discussion and then just table the amendment and bring it back up.
We'll see where we go. Representative Tammy Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know it was very hard for you to hear Matt Sue, but I'm going to kind of, you know, repeat, because you basically said what Fairbanks had also said,
right,
is that from the 3 to 5 does two things. You know, first of all, what it does is that it allows districts who already evaluate, okay, they are already evaluating at least once, if not twice, a year. And that will also even be more stringent as the state board finishes their evaluation. They're doing a new evaluation for all teachers and for teacher performance that is now going through the regulatory process. So it does two things. One, it gives them more time to give teachers who are already, like they said, making improvements, making sure those improvements continue longer than just 3 years, and give a couple more. The other part of it is that when there's not enough funding in the schools to keep all the teachers. This will give more flexibility to the districts to be able to choose who stays and who goes. It gives a bigger pool. It's exactly what it does, because we have other statutes that basically says that there has to be a drop in enrollment as well as a drop in funding, and there's a lot more to that particular process before you can start looking at tenure teachers. And, you know, when you have limited funding, we want them, you know, to be able to look at each teacher to who would be the best teacher that they can have in the classroom. And going from 3 to 5 will give them the flexibility to be able to choose the teachers that they would like to have left in there when they have to make those tough decisions. And so when, you know, we talk to the school districts as they've come through our offices, or at least my office, is what are some things we can do to make things more flexible for you so that you can make those decisions when we see funding not increasing as much as you would like. And this, and that's the two things, 3 to 5. 3 to 4 would give them a little bit more flexibility, but, you know, from the superintendents I had talked to, it still, as Matt Sue had said, was not enough.
Representative Seaton.
And Madam Chair, you know, I appreciate this conversation, and possibly if we table this amendment and take up the next amendment, because the two interact when we're talking about flexibility and those kind of things. If we are only considering the one amendment, we don't realize the flexibility, the multiple flexibilities made by the two amendments.
And for what it's worth, we do have the superintendent of the Mat-Su School District online on a different line, so maybe we can hear her differently. And hopefully she's been listening to this testimony and can affirm what the bill sponsor just said or add to it. So, Representative Paramo. Superintendent Paramo, are you online?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you for this opportunity. I have been watching on the Alaska Legislative TV.
Dina. Superintendent Paramo, I don't think we've had our coffee yet, so a little bit back from the phone, and I think we can hear you better. Go ahead.
Okay, this is Dr. Paramo, the superintendent of the Mat-Su Borough School District. How am I coming across?
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for the opportunity to just weigh in on this again. I believe Representative Wilson has really targeted this issue spot on. This request was really made by school districts and superintendents to be able to have the flexibility in times of reducing our staff. It is due to the provisions in state law in regard to tenured teachers, when we need to make a reduction, the only manner in which we can reduce our teaching staff, tenured teachers, is if our basic need is reduced or if we fall in enrollment. And many times we don't have those two provisions. And so all tenured teachers are kept in the district, yet the courses for which we need to offer students aren't considered in that provision. Basically, it's just we're going to keep these teachers. What this would allow is a larger pool of non-tenured staff for the district to make recommendations as to which teachers were going to continue employment. And those teachers would obviously be teachers that are effective teachers doing well, in addition to teachers that students need for courses so that they match. In no way was this put forward to have a kind of a lackadaisical attitude about staffing, about not making decisions on whether teachers are doing well or not. I know myself and my colleagues, in order to meet, you know, student needs and be effective, we're judged, we're graded, we have AYP, we need the best staff in the positions. Additionally, we don't want to see just a one-year dog and pony show or this or that, you know, sorry about the terminology. We want to see effectiveness over time. And in practice, what is happening is that many times, you know, folks are tenured without being evaluated fairly and probably, you know, long enough. But truly, the impetus for this bill was to allow us the flexibility to make the determination of best staffing for our schools. That was really the primary issue. given almost a reduction in funding. Actually, not a reduction in funding, a reduction in being able to purchase what we purchased the last year, because certainly our basic need continues to increase.
Thank you. Representative Sadler, you had a question for the superintendent?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Real briefly, kind of for illumination, I do understand the point that having a larger pool of non-tenured teachers gives the school district more flexibility to meet its budget with funding constraints. I just want to make the point and see if you agree or not. It's kind of rhetorical that a teacher who does not have tenure yet is not automatically assumed to be a less effective teacher than a teacher who has tenure. Even though a teacher who's in their second and a half year might not have tenure, they still could be doing just as good a job as a teacher with tenure. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that is absolutely correct. Time doesn't necessarily make you a better teacher.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And I was curious, how many teachers do you hire in a year? What percentage of your staff do you hire in a year?
Through the chair, I'm going to go off of just understanding from board. I wish Katie Gardner, our HR, she would have the exact numbers. Year to year, it's fewer and fewer folks. We do hire, this year I believe we hired about 40 people, but probably 75% of them were in special education and related services. We are not hiring very many general education teachers, elementary teachers, because of we're reducing year to year the amount of staff we have, just due to our availability of what the dollar can buy in the year, you know, the current year.
And since we did open up public testimony, we do have two in the room, Carl Rose.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Good morning. For the record, I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. We just had 70 school board members in town talking about a variety of issues, mostly trying to express the challenges that we face and ask you for some assistance as we move forward. If I may, I was very involved in the rewrite of this tenure law. I believe the year was 1995. There was much improvement in the law. We removed the trial de novo, and for some of you, you may not know what that is, but a trial de novo required a new trial. All the evidentiary would be expunged, and you'd have to recreate that record, possibly 3 and 4 years hence. People move, people forget, people pass away. Very difficult, so that was removed. We put into place plans of improvement to ensure that teachers would receive the opportunity to improve instruction before non-retention would come to pass. We also put in place that teachers would have the opportunity to create the evidentiary at a hearing at the local level and or proceed straight to arbitration. There were a number of things that were discussed. It was a long, drawn-out process. The first passage of that bill was vetoed by the governor, then Governor Knowles. The second second attempt at this bill was built along that veto message. And to make a long story short, that issue was put in place, the bill was much improved, and we moved forward. Now here we are today. The issue today is the constraints on school districts. My membership understands that the strain on principals in classrooms to document the kind of information that needs to be done to move a job action, if you're taking a look at a non-retention, is extremely difficult. Our administrators are stretched. We have a number of requirements that they have, and so, once again, to make a long story short, it's very difficult to take a look at that aspect. What you're hearing today is we're at a new stage. We're having to contend with some major challenges with regard to resources. We are having to do meet requirements of highly qualified issues. We have people that we've recruited to come to our schools to address the issues that we have in courses that we offer. These teachers are, during times of reduction in force, normally your best qualified teachers are the ones who are put on the block for non-retention. I believe this issue of 5 years does give us some latitude. When we initially talked about this issue, we had asked for 5 years. This is back in 1995. We moved from 2 years to 3 years. So that's where we are right now. The circumstances have changed. There is much more pressure on the system. And I think what you just heard from Dr. Paramo is the reality. My superintendents, which I do not represent directly, but the board members who hire them, have recently been in town, and they are in favor of this piece of legislation because it grants you the latitude that we need. We have been working as best we can with our employees at the local level. It's very difficult to be able to recruit people, get them to the school district, knowing that during times of reduction, the people that are highly recruited and needed possibly be the first ones to leave. The window would be larger. You would have a larger pool. And amongst my membership, I do have to say, this issue raises the whole issue of tenure itself. Mm-hmm. So with that, that's not in this bill, but I will just share with you. I was asked to come here, and I apologize for not being here sooner on this bill, but I was asked to come here and offer the association's position on this as a result of the people who were just here. They've been asked in the hallways about this bill, and they asked me to come down and get on record. They support the bill as proposed, largely because of the latitude that is required. So with that, I'll answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Representative Sadler, did you have questions?
I do, Madam Chair. Mr. Rose, I appreciate hearing the views of the administrators. You made a statement that the best teachers are put on the block first, or something to that effect. Just wanted you to clarify that statement, if you would.
Thank you, Representative Sadler. Through the chair, we actively recruit people, hopefully the best people we can find, especially in highly qualified areas. The teachers are vulnerable during times of layoff because, in most cases, if not required by law, also through negotiated agreements, tenured teachers are protected and non-tenured teachers are exposed. What this would hopefully do is provide a larger pool up to 5 years before you have to make that decision between a tenured teacher and a non-tenured teacher. It is it's not as much flexibility as we would like, but it is a flexibility issue. And so my membership has asked me to bring that forward.
And I do understand the main point you're making, the flexibility in the larger pool of non-tenure employees. I still don't quite understand. Are you saying that the teachers in their first 5 years, I don't think you're saying they're more qualified. Who is on the block first? Are you saying the people who do not have tenure are on the block first? And you said they're the most qualified. I still understand that.
through the chair, I'll give you an example. A couple of my members are saying that they have teachers who may be shop teachers, they may be music teachers, they may be in areas of history. They have teachers who are tenured, and they go out and recruit teachers in math and science, and those teachers are on the block because they're non-tenured before considering any of the tenured teachers. If you had 5 years, you'd have a larger pool. That's all I'm saying. Decisions have to be made about the qualifications, and really qualifications become secondary to tenure in many of our school districts.
And again, I do understand your main point. I got that, but you're still trying to say, are you saying that the more recently recruited teachers are the most qualified? Because the statement you said is the best teachers are on the block. Again, I understand the point about, you know, you made, but why are you saying the best teachers are the non-tenured teachers?
Thank you for the clarification. We're talking highly qualified teachers. We're talking teachers who are skilled in the areas of science, math, whatever the case may be. We specifically go out and recruit these people, bring them in, knowing full well that if we have a reduction in force, they would probably be on the block first to go.
I think you're having to recruit a more qualified, highly qualified pool of teachers. The requirements under federal requirements are requiring you to recruit newer people, and that new cohort of non-tenure teachers are among the most qualified. Is that what you're saying?
I think so. If I could clarify, when you say among the most qualified. I would say that a band teacher is most qualified for music, yeah. And so on and so forth. So we're not talking about qualifications. We're talking about recruitment in areas of highly qualified, and those people are
okay,
the ones
that the highly qualified teachers ones. Yeah, I think I understand what you're saying, but you're not quite.
Right.
Thank you.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. The amendment that we're looking at right now has two aspects that were brought forward in public testimony. And the other one is that having the option for districts to offer tenure at 3 years, if you have a very highly qualified teacher that is there and you want to make sure that, as a district, that somebody, you want to make sure you retain them. Did you guys talk about that aspect? And if you didn't, can you give us your personal opinion on whether that's a valuable piece for the ability for a school district to offer at 3 years?
Thank you, Representative Seaton. Through the chair, we didn't talk specifically about this amendment, but I understand it. I think the idea of being able to tenure people when you think it's appropriate, if you think you have someone that you'd like to protect and you want to give them in 3 years, I think that makes sense. We haven't taken a formal position on the amendment. I would share with you this, that in many of our school districts, we still have seniority that we go by, and so that becomes an issue. But I understand where the amendment goes. I think our people would be in favor of the amendment as opposed to what we have today. But what I understand from my folks, they are in favor of the bill as it's introduced. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You. And we do have part of public testimony, Ron Fuhrer. If you'll please come forward. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chairman. My name is Ron Fuhrer, President of NEA Alaska. First of all, there are 32 states that have the exact same timeline for tenure. And when we're in the attract and retain mode for the best and highest quality teachers, those folks are looking at what are my opportunities, because people go into teaching for a career. And I believe that if you would look at the statistics, most teachers spend their career in a state, if not a single district. I have spent 32 years in the Anchorage School District. We have already reduced the defined benefit pension plan to a defined contribution. That is one of the components that a career teacher is going to take a look at, as to where do I want to spend my career. Okay, Alaska does not have a defined benefit plan. Now we're looking at, am I going to go to a state that has a longer time to achieve tenure, stability? And it's very frustrating. It seems that there are still people that believe tenure is a job for life. I believe I heard someone speak that earlier this morning. As a 32-year teacher, in no less than 90 or no more than 180 days, I can be released, dismissed, terminated, fired, you choose the term. We're looking at attracting and retaining the highest quality teachers in Alaska. We talk about how Alaska is not performing. I disagree, but there is that talk. If we put yet another higher standard for the best and the brightest to consider Alaska as their career in teaching, are we really improving our system, or are we including yet another hurdle to get the best and the brightest into teaching the future of our state, our students? Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you support the amendment?
The amendment is interesting, and I would support it over the original bill, yes.
Representative Ryan.
How long again have you been with this district or with the?
32 in Alaska and 4 outside.
Okay, because there was somebody who testified that there was a very few number of teachers they believed. Can you give us an estimate of per year how many teachers are let go once they're tenured?
I know it happens, and my experience and personal knowledge is related only to the Anchorage School District.
And what's the percentage?
Again, a lot of those are private matters, and some in some cases are given the option to resign as opposed to being dismissed. And that is, I would guess, anywhere from 5 to 10%. And it is purely a guess.
Through the chair, you say 5 to 10% of the teachers that are tenured get laid off every year.
That's purely a guess.
Okay, thank you.
Because I don't have any numbers.
Thank you very much. With that, we will close public testimony again. Thank you. And we'll bring it back to the committee what we'd like to do with the amendments. We've certainly heard testimony that the school boards have recommended and like the original bill, and so
original.
Representative Seaton.
Madam Chair, as we discussed, we have two amendments that both interact with each other, so I'd move that we table amendment number one until we've had discussion on the other amendments so that we can consider them as they work together.
Is there any objection?
Yeah, I object.
Representative Sadler.
I guess I'd like to vote on this and get it done.
Let's
call the roll.
Clerk, can we have a roll call, please?
The motion.
And let's be sure what we're voting on.
How do we do it? He is objecting. So we have to.
Yeah, the motion was to table.
Yeah, we're just voting on whether to table it or not.
Okay. And our vote would be to table amendment number one.
Tabling amendment one to HB
160. Madam Chair.
Just a moment, Representative Seaton.
And just for clarification, so that everybody knows what we're voting on, we're voting to put this aside, the vote motion to table is to put this amendment aside for consideration at a later time if someone brings it up.
It's my understanding that we're looking at putting it aside so that we can get to the original bill and vote on the original bill.
To table it or not, regardless of what happens subsequently.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Ledoux.
I'm confused. So does that mean we're not going to consider amendment number two at all?
If we table amendment number one?
No, we'll discuss amendment number two.
That's right. Representative Seaton.
Madam Chair, my intention in tabling this is to then offer amendment number two.
Okay. Because let's take a brief at ease and let's.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We're back on the record. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to withdraw my motion to table amendment number one.
Seeing no objection, we've withdrawn that amendment.
Madam Chair.
Representative Seaton.
I withdrew my motion to table, and now I would like to withdraw amendment number one.
Sorry. Seeing no objection, it's now been withdrawn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'd like to offer amendment 28 LS 06-17A.3 is amendment number two.
Object for a discussion.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment it's page 2, line 17, but it's tenure is subject to review so that after a teacher acquires tenure, it can be reviewed every 5 years, and the school district may terminate tenure if upon conclusion of the review the school district finds that during the five-year period, one, the teacher did not meet the school district's goals for student academic achievement for two of the 5 years. Second condition would be
the teacher's work performance did not improve as required in a plan of improvement provided under AS 1420-149, or the teacher did not adequately, this is number three, teacher did not adequately assist the school district with the implementation of a school-wide change made by the school district to the instructional model that is used by the school where this teacher is employed. So, Madam Chair, that's the explanation. I'd move amendment number two. I guess we did.
Yeah, we did.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would like to ask a question of the drafter. Is Mr. Wayne still online?
Mr. Wayne, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
And we do have a question. Representative Wilson.
Mr. Wayne, is it these two amendments, could we pass this 8.3 amendment? Can we pass that one and not pass the first one? Can this amendment stand by itself in the bill, in our current bill?
Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Seaton.
And Madam Chair, the purpose of this amendment is to give flexibility to also make sure that the teachers that have tenure are working on continuous improvement and integration of school-wide instructional models. What it does is offers three other criteria so that we have a school system that is operating efficiently and is moving forward as a school, because if you have a school going forward and you have some teachers there that are not instituting new models of instructional models within the school, all of a sudden the school has jumps and starts. In other words, if you have an elementary school and you have a new instructional model for reading, and somebody in one grade wants to stay with the old model that they used, all of a sudden that instructional model through the elementary school doesn't work. And so this makes sure that everyone's coordinated and working together for going forward. Also, it uses the district's goals for student achievement, and if the students aren't exhibiting growth, expected growth for 2 out of 5 years, then that could be a reason also for non-extension of that contract after the fifth year.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To clarify a question to the maker of the motion of the amendment, are you saying in the third, number three there, so if a teacher kind of is dragging his or her feet and not getting with the program, so to speak, you want to make sure you have the wherewithal to give them a nudge or have a stick to threaten them that they better get with the program and embrace the new instructional model, and there's consequences for not doing so. Is that correct?
And through the chair, Representative Sadler, yes, making sure that everyone is aligned with the program, the teaching model that's being, teaching models do change over time, and they're only effective if they're implemented throughout the entire school.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What are the existing consequences if on line 12, if the teacher's work performance did not improve as required in a plan of improvement already provided under the statute named? What are the current consequences of not improving?
Is this a better question for possibly the administration?
It would be.
And I think we do have the commissioner online. Commissioner Hanley, are you there?
I am.
Did you hear the question?
Only part of it.
Okay. Representative Drummond, would you re-ask the question?
What are the current consequences of a teacher's work performance not improving as required in a plan of improvement?
For the record, my name is Mike Hanley. I'm the commissioner for the Department of Education. And there are steps that a district can take to address those deficiencies and move towards termination.
So they can already, through the chair, so a district may already terminate a teacher with tenure if their work and performance does not improve as required in a plan of improvement.
Correct. So they've already been deemed, through the chair, Representative Drummond, they've already been deemed either non-compliant or unsatisfactory on the teaching content standards. And a plan of improvement is put in place, and if an improvement doesn't take place, then that ability is already there to set further actions, including termination.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Peggy Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Hanley, so this bill then, if they can already do this, and so really, this bill is bringing it, it's actually lengthening it and giving teachers a better opportunity to improve than what we have now?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, just so that the committee is clear, I don't have the amendment in front of me. I do have the original bill. That's all I have access to from here. But by lengthening tenure, the requirements for terminating a teacher or addressing needs are not as high as they are for when a teacher does reach tenure. So it is easier to implement correction and potentially termination prior to a teacher receiving tenure.
Thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
So would this amendment make it easier for a school district to terminate somebody who already has tenure? Does it give the school district any other tool that it doesn't already have?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I don't have that amendment. I couldn't adequately speak to that amendment. It would probably have to fall back to the sponsor or the drafter of that.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. Commissioner Hanley, it says that what this amendment does is it gives tenure subject to review every 5 years, and the school district may terminate the tenure if upon conclusion of the review the district finds that during the five-year period, one, the teacher did not meet the district's goals for student academic achievement for two of the 5 years, two, the teacher's work performance did not improve as required in a plan of improvement provided under 1420-149, or the teacher did not adequately assist the school district with the implementation of a school-wide change made by the school district to the instructional model that is used by a school where the teacher is employed. And for instance of that third one is if they decided to go, they were going to use iPads in every single classroom and one of the teachers just refused, then I would suppose that would be a reason for them not retaining her. But and then it goes on to say that tenure rights are lost when the teacher's employment in the district is interrupted or terminated, or when tenure is terminated under this new section, which is 1420-152. However, a teacher on layoff status does not lose tenure rights during the period of layoff except as provided as one of the statutes that is already there, which is 1420-177.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I was jotting down notes as you spoke to that amendment, and I still would be cautious, but I can speak to what I understand it to be, but I'm cautious without having the language in front of me and being able to quickly refer to those references that you gave. It basically seems that the conditions are work performance being unsatisfactory or what I would consider insubordination, which is also an issue for correction or potentially termination if someone said, "Well, I'm not going to follow the curriculum, I'm not going to follow the directives that have been given to me." So I think those are the two areas, and it seems that by reopening tenure, it causes or allows for a reevaluation of a teacher's performance after their 5 years or every 5 years, and it potentially opens up a window to provide actions on the part of the administration for correction that may be more aggressive than it would have been with a teacher who was tenured.
Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Hanley, this amendment, Amendment 2, envisions possible loss of tenure for three fairly specific transgressions. I'm looking through the statute book as we speak, but I can't see that. Are there other circumstances in which a tenured teacher can lose that tenure?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, yes, there are. When you look at things that would fall under the purview of the Professional Teaching Practices Commission, crimes of moral turpitude and other things like that could cause for immediate termination of even a tenured teacher.
Representative Sadler.
And on that same topic, I'll ask the maker of the amendment. This is three fairly specific. Were there other circumstances or transgressions you considered but did not include, or can you speak to the reasoning why these particular three?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, yes, this does not delete the current moral perpetuity and those kinds of issues, but the purpose of this was to look at making sure that we have effective teachers that are staying with the program of advancing education and being willing to change in relationship to changing their instructional models to coordinate with instructional models that are being done in the schools. I think that the idea is that sometimes what happens is as you've been in a school a long time, you get set in your ways, and this is to make sure that everybody is working towards the same goals and coordinating for those to get those goals and making sure that there is student achievement. That's why it's, if you're not seeing the growth in 2 of 5 years, mm-hmm. then student growth in the schools, then that would be a reason that's set out here.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. I appreciate that. A couple points. I understand that the state is going towards having student performance will have an increasingly higher factor into a teacher's performance evaluations at the administration level. But this appears, by allowing a review every 5 years, it would seem to kind of weaken the protections of tenure. I just wonder if that's your intention or not the goal, but would you agree that's kind of the effect of the amendment?
The effect of this is to make sure that tenured teachers are adequately advancing in instructional models and that students are learning. So this is not trying to weaken, right. but trying to make sure that those protections are still effective in gaining teacher professional development and student growth.
And I just would be interested in asking the commissioner a general question of his opinion of the
right.
amendment.
And it's my understanding that the commissioner was faxed this amendment, and I'm not entirely sure if he's received it. Commissioner Hanley, have you received the copy of Amendment 2, which ends in A.3?
I hadn't as of a few moments ago. I've got somebody stepping out right now to check the fax machine.
Sure. Representative Reinbold.
Commissioner Hanley, while we're waiting for that fax, I'm going to ask just a quick question. There's been conflicting testimony about how many teachers tenured teachers are laid off annually. Is that a statistic that the Department of Education keeps?
And if I could interrupt, I know that there's been conversation about tenured teachers that have been fired, laid off. I can't remember some of the other terms that the president of NEA used, but I think that there is a difference.
Yeah, good point.
So, Chair Gaddis, is that a question for me at this point?
Well, I wanted to, yes. I think the question is how many tenured teachers have been fired
per year?
Chair Gaddis, through Chair Gaddis to Representative Reinbold, those are local employment issues, and we don't have those at the state level. Those would be determined at the local level.
Thank you. Got that fax yet?
We just checked, and no, I don't. I can, I don't know if it's possible to email it to me, but the fax hasn't come through.
Okay.
I think we hear something coming here.
Technology at its best. Are there any other questions why the commissioner gets his fax and reads through it? Representative Ledoux.
I'd like to ask Representative Tammy Wilson a question.
If she'll, the bill sponsor will step forward. And we apologize for taking this long. We knew that you had an appointment at 9 with finance. So, Representative Wilson. Go ahead, Representative Ledoux.
I'd just like to know how the bill sponsor feels about this amendment.
Through Chair Representative Ledoux, what this amendment does is that it actually does address the 10-year issue itself, where my bill originally only spoke about when you did that. From what I understand what the sponsor of the amendment does is that it definitely gives us a 5-year review of those who have 10-year. And if we're expecting highly qualified teachers, effective teachers, to be in the classroom, I do believe this is the right move to make. I think it will go in conjunction with the new evaluations that's currently being put out by the State Board of Education, and will give another tool in the toolbox for our superintendents. So I'm in favor of the way this amendment is.
Thank you.
Do we want to wait on comments from the commissioner or Representative Wilson?
I actually am ready to go ahead and vote on this amendment, but you know, I don't know if Representative Reinbold is wanting to listen to what's going on. Or
thank you, Representative Drummond.
Thank you. I'm trying to be thoughtful about this. If a plan of improvement is in place, and the school district can already terminate a teacher based on the lack of performance under a plan of improvement, why couldn't items 1 on line 10 and item 3 on line 14 also be included in that plan of improvement? And is there anybody in the room who can tell us if meeting the school district's goals for student academic achievement can already be included in a plan of improvement?
It could be.
Or assisting the school district with the implementation of a school-wide change to the instruction model could not be included in a plan of improvement.
It could be.
Then I'm not quite understanding why this amendment is necessary if all of those requirements can already be included in a plan of improvement.
Does anybody want to speak to that? Representative Tammy Wilson is going to give it a shot. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drummond, these would, from my understanding, what this amendment would do, this would be a 5-year evaluation for all teachers. The plan of correction is only for those teachers who, you know, have not met the expectations for whatever reason for that district. What my understanding is that this amendment would be for everyone would go through that 5-year evaluation just so that we're on track. We know that they're going through the curriculum in the way that the district wants to. So the plan of correction would only currently be for those that are not meeting the goal. And the maker might want to say if I'm on track or not.
Representative Seaton.
Madam Chair, I'd agree that the idea here is for, you know, all teachers to be aware that professional development and student achievement and coordination with new instructional models are something that's very necessary to do. It gives a goal, gives a reopener. Everybody knows that there's accountability there. Without one of the criteria for basically a case to be brought and adjudication, those kind of things, yeah, even though it's but I can't give you the identical or the exact methodology of which that is done in the school district. You'd have to ask the school district themselves.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just think that this would give the schools another tool in their toolbox for the flexibility to do the things. Things come up nowadays that didn't come up years ago. And I think it's important to be able to have the flexibility. The schools want the flexibility. And it sounds to me that this isn't sounds to me like that a good teacher I think that there are schools where I look at myself as a nurse. Actually, as a nurse, I have to be on my toes all the time, and my evaluation will make a difference whether I'm hired the next year or not. And so it's every year for me as a nurse, and in most industries, it's every year. I mean, you have to do an excellent job, and if you don't, you're out of there, and somebody else is going to take your place. And so this is this shouldn't be threatening to anybody, because this is a five-year look. And so I just think that this is something that would, if it's going to help the schools give them the flexibility if they have a math teacher that has resigned and they have a new math teacher, that they might be able to have that five-year period of time where it's bigger and their pool is bigger and they have that flexibility a little bit more. So I like this amendment. I like this bill.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. I echo that. I do like the bill, and I'm getting more a better warm feeling about the amendment. A question I would ask: if it would impose any significant additional administrative burden on school districts or the State Department of Education? I think that
is that a question for the?
Yes, it's kind of a throw out there. So if the sponsor's here.
Through Chair, Representative Sadler, as you already heard from the department, this would be a local level. They are doing the evaluations. I think it's just helps them have a timetable that every 5 years they're doing. So I cannot see this being any additional burden to what they already do. And like I said, currently, as the commissioner said, they do not participate in this part of it.
So what's the will of the committee? Do we accept this amendment?
Madam Chair, I remove my objection.
Thank you. Seeing no objection.
There's no
objection. We don't need.
Madam Chair.
Representative Drummond.
I'm still not convinced that this amendment is necessary if the school district can already terminate based on a plan of improvement. So I do object to this amendment.
Okay. Well, at that case, then we'll have a roll call.
Can we have a brief at ease?
Brief at ease. On the record, and if the clerk will call a roll call, and let's be real clear what we're voting for. We're voting for amendment number 2. And it's 28-LS0617/A.3, just to be clear.
Yes.
Representative Steaton.
Yes.
Representative Peggy Wilson.
Yes.
Representative Dummond.
No.
Representative Ledoux.
Yes.
Representative Sadler.
Yes.
Chair Gaddis.
Yes.
I have 6 yeas, 1 nay.
And so the amendment passes.
Madam Chair.
Representative Seaton.
Madam Chair, I'd like to reoffer amendment number one, which was A.2.
I object.
And Madam Chair, I'm offering this amendment because I think it works in conjunction. It gives the flexibility for the districts to offer tenure at 3 years. To give incentive for retaining some particular teachers that they want to at a earlier time, as well as it goes to 4 years, is the district's an additional year, but not 2 additional years.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really think that if a district wanted to do that, they could do that now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an unheard of thing, but it probably, if they really wanted to, they could say, you're a darn good teacher, and they could let that teacher know that they're not going to let her go.
Madam Chair.
Representative Seaton.
As I read the law, it specifies when tenure is offered, or when tenure can be, when someone gets tenure, and it doesn't include anything that you can offer tenure at other than those times. So that was one of the things that was testified to in public testimony, is that would have been beneficial to allow that.
Representative Wilson.
I kind of disagree, and the reason I disagree is because they could offer a 5-year teaching contract, or they could be flexible if that teacher's got 3 more years to go or 2 more years to go before tenure would happen. They could offer them a contract long enough to, so the teacher would know that. So,
and for what it's worth, we have spent some time on this amendment. What is the will of this committee? This will, Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I like this amendment. I believe that it gives districts flexibility. I don't believe that if House Bill 162 were to pass, that school districts would have the option of offering tenure on the first day of the 4th year. They would only be able to offer it on the first day of the 6th year if 162 passed. So I believe that this gives districts even more flexibility, and that if they appear to be, since they appear to be asking for more flexibility, I believe that this amendment does that, and I will be supporting this amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I retain my objection.
Clerk, if we could do another roll call, and just to be real clear, what we're going to ask for the roll is for amendment known as amendment number one. And got a pile of papers here, and it's someone's got a copy of it. Make sure I've got it. Amendment number 128-LS0617/A.2 for House Bill 162. And clerk, if you'll go ahead and call the roll.
Representative Seaton.
Yes.
Representative Kennedy.
No.
Representative
Dunn. Yes. Representative Ledoux. No. Representative Reinbold. No. Representative
Reinbold. No. Chair Gaddis.
No. I have 2 yeas, 5 nays. Okay, so amendment number one is off the table, and we'll move zero will to move House Bill 162. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Bill, which one? 162, version, where are we at here?
Been all over.
I know what I've got. 162, version A, out of committee as amended, with the company fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Without objection, the bill moves. Thank you very much. We'll call brief at ease. There we go. Okay, we're back on the record. And we have House Bill 31 to hear, and we'll call the bill sponsor and their staff forward. Thank you, Representative Keller, for waiting so long. We had planned to hear this at 9, and 40 minutes later, we've given him 20 minutes, and we appreciate your indulgence.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the committee for hearing this. For the record, my name is Representative Wes Keller. I represent House District 7. I want to thank you, the committee, for your work for our kids in the state of Alaska. I can't think of a more honorable role than to be setting policy to ensure that our kids get a good education. And that's a sincere thank you, having served on the committee myself. Just thanks a lot. HB 31, very simply, requires the school districts, all school districts, to create a curriculum segment in the history of American constitutionalism and require that students complete the curriculum segment as a condition of graduation. American history is already an integral part of our public education system, and many of the schools probably already have that in place. It's not a novel requirement, but it should be a requirement. The American constitutionalism is what we find when we look at the six seminal documents of American history that are so important to us: the Declaration of Independence, the early state constitutions, the Articles of Confederation, the U.S. Constitution, the Federalist Papers, and the Bill of Rights. What it's about is, of course, is the principles and the ideas and the values that are found in these six documents in that 15-year time frame of our history, where there was probably the most creative work ever done in history of mankind on human government. And America, as a product of that, I believe, has given the world its greatest gift, and that is freedom and the freedom principles. It's about those principles and values found in those documents. It's interesting, since when I put this in, this bill was fatality of last session. And when I put it in, it was about the time that Hosni Mubarak, a member, was overthrown. And shortly after, the same year, in 2011, they put together a new constitution in the state of Egypt. And now, just on December 26th, they introduced another new constitution. And then here, just 3 days ago, on March 24th, there was rioting in the streets, people killed in Egypt, and they're fighting over their new constitution. In fact, the guy that was leading the charge to put the new constitution together is stepped down now, and who knows what the end will be. I bring this up because it illustrates, as we evaluate what's going on in Egypt, it illustrates the values that are in American, we find in American constitutionalism. For one thing, the source of our human rights. Our Declaration of Independence says so clearly that certain truths are self-evident, that we're created with rights, natural rights, among them life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that all men are created equal. And so the point is that the source of the rights in the Constitution in the United States of America are natural rights. They're innate in the human being, or they're from our Creator. And you contrast that now with the Egyptian attempt at putting the Constitution together. The grantor of the rights that are in the Constitution is the military. They're still very strong. And you see that the any rights they relinquished to the people had to come from them. You know, it wasn't innate in the Egyptian people. So that's one of the ways we can evaluate what's going on in Egypt. Our Constitution in both Alaska and the U.S., we the people, you know, that's what it's about. That's the source of the strength of our human government. How about freedom of religion? We look at the new Constitution in Egypt right now. They've allowed freedom of religion for Abrahamic religions, Christianity, Muslim, Islam, you know, anything Abrahamic. But beyond that, it doesn't go beyond that, because it's that's here you can be free to believe however you want to believe. That's an essential freedom. And again, that is, we're evaluating the Egyptian attempt here at a constitution in the context of American constitutionalism. Freedom of expression, there's none in the new constitution in Egypt. Equality of women, not there. Right to be detained or tortured is limited in the, under the new constitution in Egypt, but it's again limited. Anyway, the point being, there's so many things, values, that we in America tend to take for granted, actually, and tend to forget, tend to lose our passion and love for, and that is something that we just can't tolerate, and we just dare not forget. And by the way, I'm not accusing the public school system of anything. I think some of them are doing a good job in teaching the values of American constitutionalism, but there is a concern that is shared by many. I would expect that it's shared by many of you, that there are a lot of people out there that don't understand what's going on. They don't know what it's about to have three branches of government and why it's there, and I run into them all the time. I want to hark back to Chief Justice Walter Carpenetti, just a couple of real quick quotes. He gave us the State of the Judiciary a couple of years ago. I'm sorry.
And just a minute, Representative Keller. Representative Sadler had a question.
No comment.
Oh, okay. Keep going.
Yeah. Okay, just real briefly, I think it just captures the thought that there is a concern that we need to have to keep this on the front burner. And these are quotes from his State of the Judiciary to us on March 9th, 2011. I would like to conclude today with an invitation to each of you, legislators and anyone watching the speech, to join me in the effort to instill in our young people the same knowledge and respect for the laws and the institutions of our country that we are all privileged to share. And then he gives a lead to iCivics, I think it is, .org. It's a group that was started by Supreme Court Justice O'Connor, who is really pushing this also. He also said, this is a quote from a quote of a quote. Thomas Jefferson said that the qualifications for self-government are not innate. They are the result of habit and long training. As we work together to advance cost-effective justice, we must remember that the greatest guarantee of a strong future for all three branches of government is a citizenry that understands and embraces the fundamental principles of democracy. So with that, I'm going to stop, but I want to say I realize that doing a curriculum mandate is not a popular thing. And what I am saying to mitigate that is, number one, some already are, and if they're not, sorry, I think they should be, you know, and it's a simple thing, you know, put together the curriculum. It's not a cost, because there are just countless sources of curriculum out there on this topic. One of them I'd go to right away is iCivics.com. You can look it up, but it's online, ready to go, and I've read testimonials of teachers that are promoting it. So that's the policy decision that's in front of you, and I think you understand the heart and the desire of the sponsor. Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question. It always comes to mind, unfunded mandate. And so you say that there's a lot of curriculum already out there. Like everything else, there's some that are better than others, and does the fact that you're stating specifically American constitutionalism, does that zero in enough so that you know that they're going to be teaching the fundamentals of how our Constitution got started and why and all that?
Thank you for the question, Representative Wilson. It's very, the reason for the word ism is to put a focus on the values. So it doesn't say that the teacher's curriculum director or anything has to take any particular event. And I'm going to raise something that's controversial. Probably some of you believe what do we call in a living document in the Constitution. Others would say, no, it's a solid document. And that debate is there. This bill does not go there. It says, look at the values that the founders had when they put this thing together. And then what that does is, it just assumes the critical thinking of the student, of the teachers, and whatever, to make application of the sources, of that applying those values to civics today.
Representative Ledoux.
I guess I'd just like to note that there's a zero fiscal note when we're talking about unfunded mandates.
I realize that. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I support this legislation. The public school system is supposed to create good citizens, and we hear often that Alaska is the first port of call for many new Americans from the Pacific Rim and elsewhere. So I think that's important for our public schools to offer this kind of education. Permit me a brief personal reminiscence. In sixth grade, I messed up, and my teacher made a bunch of us who messed up read and paraphrase the U.S. Constitution, basically rewrite the whole thing, which forced me to understand it and awaken to respect for our system of government. And it probably set me on the path that led me here. God bless us. But when I got elected, I asked myself, what could I do to offer the benefits of that kind of education exposure to the Constitution? And the ideas I came up with are very substantially similar to what you've come up with, and I support that. I think this bill will ensure that students have the opportunity to learn about an essential element of good citizenship. Some get it at the church, some get it at Boy Scouts, some get it at their mother's knee, some get it from Mr. Wisdowski, my teacher. But this will ensure that all students have that opportunity, and I support it.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Madam Chair, and I guess I just want to make sure that I understand. You're not talking about teaching civics. You're not talking about teaching the Constitution. You're not teaching the Declaration of Independence. Your constitutionalism talks about the values of the people that created those documents, and this isn't a study of the documents themselves.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I cannot imagine how you could understand the values that surrounded the founding of this country and the kind of government that we have without studying those documents. It's presumed that, that those documents hold the information that is plenty of information there to get. I've given some examples, so I won't repeat, but.
Madam Chair.
Representative Seaton.
I guess I'm looking at page 2, lines 9. I mean, we discussed this in a previous committee. The philosophies and historical context that generated those documents. In previous testimony, you've said that what you wanted to do was have the values of the people that created the documents, and that's what constitutionalism is. So that it wasn't studying the Constitution or the documents themselves, but the value basis of the people that created the, and that 15-year time span in which they were done, and the values of the people of that time period is what was supposed to be contained in constitutionalism. So is this new bill have a different tack than that, other than the values and the moralities of the people that surrounded those 15 years that you talk about in here of the time in which those, I guess that's page 2, lines 4, the span of 15 years.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I don't know, I apologize if I said something that made that separation. It's not there in my mind. If you look at page 2, line 6, starting on line 5 there, item 4, it talks about a number of historical written documents that appeared over 15 years continue to serve to define our national identity and our constitutional republic form of government. The Declaration of Independence and goes through and lists the documents out like I did in the testimony previously. It doesn't say anything about studying people. It's a history mandate and not a civics mandate, because I think Looking at this historically and looking at those documents historically provides an inevitable segue to issues related to civics. So that's why it's not a civics mandate. It's an American history mandate, you know, in that category as I see. But I see teachers, I'm being a teacher myself, you know, I can see just all kinds of possibilities here that I could go to challenge the student's thinking, and I'm not real clear on why you're making that distinction, but my intention as a sponsor is to draw focus on those seminal documents that are so foundational to our country, in which we find the values like natural rights, that we're all created equal, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that we find in those documents. So I don't know why the separation. I didn't mean to if I misled.
And we have only a few more minutes left, and we've had some great people in our LIOs waiting, so I'm going to take them so that I know their time is important. So if you don't mind, sponsor, if I do take them. We do have from the Kenai LIO, Christine Hutchison. Are you still there? And thank you for waiting.
Thank you, Chairman. My name is Christine Hutchison. I'm here in Kenai. I'm representing myself. I am a teacher also, and I taught social studies in Montana, where the state history was required. I was surprised to learn that the Constitution is not a required subject matter. And I'm very proud of this, first of Wes Keller for bringing this forward and getting it on the record and in the statutes, that we can expect this teaching to be given to our children. And I'd like to commend the committee for their support. So far I've heard good support of the committee for this. I know that in the fall there's Constitution Day, and it's an excellent opportunity to bring the Constitution into the classroom at every level. But I just am really excited that the state legislature would move forward on getting this required in the education, so that we can expect a concentrated effort at the upper level where our voters come from. It's my practice on occasion to simply ask people if they're registered to vote. And I've had people in this, young people in this community tell me that Bob Byrd in Nikiski, he saw that every one of their graduating class understood the Constitution and their privilege to vote, and that if they were of age, they were registered to vote. So I'm very happy to see Wes Keller bring this forward and to see this committee take positive action to make this happen. So I'm just looking forward to this being passed by the committee and by the legislature. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next we'll go to the Mat-Su LIO, and we have Stuart Thompson. Are you with us, Stuart?
Yes, I am.
Please introduce yourself and who you may be with for the record, and go ahead with your testimony.
Sure. Madam Chairman and committee members, I am Stuart Thompson of District 10, a private Alaska citizen and voter. I'm here to testify concerning HB 31 under the dominant authority of Alaska Constitution Article 1, Sections 1 and 2. Excuse me, this is a very emotional subject for me. Okay, started my prepared 3-minute testimony. The American Constitutional History Literacy Act should be passed. The destructive results in society from merely embedding elements of constitutional and government study in social studies classes show up nearly everywhere. Public ignorance, individual citizen power under a form of constitutional government is the single greatest condition that enables corruption and eventual overthrow of that government. To illustrate this, consider this Thomas Paine quote. Reason and ignorance influence the bulk of mankind. If either of these can be rendered sufficiently extensive, the machinery of government goes easily on. Reason obeys itself, and ignorance submits to whatever is dictated to it. Let me illustrate just one prominent example of the constitutional illiteracy prevalent in this country. Both President Bush and President Obama, in speeches and conduct, have asserted that the primary function of government is to protect the American people. This sounds feel-good and compassionate, doesn't it? But protection by definition and by the realities of application inherently entails the restriction or elimination of liberty by an elite, the complete opposite of the theme of self-government embodied in Lincoln's phrase, government of, by, and for the people. Not only that, population protection as the primary function of government completely contradicts U.S. founding documents. Per the Federalist Papers number 51, justice is the end of government. It is the end of civil society. Justice is not the vicious savagery of retaliation and revenge, but the instrument developed by civilization to address righting abuses of liberty through due process and the pursuit of truth. Pursuit of happiness, an inalienable right per the Declaration of Independence, is naturally empowered by liberty and justice according to the political theories of our founders. Even the U.S. Pledge of Allegiance embodies this foundation principle with the phrase, with liberty and justice for all. So ask yourselves these questions. What future does this country have when even presidents show their virtual non-comprehension of even the U.S. Pledges of Allegiance meaning, and nobody calls them on it? What future does this country have when educators commit virtual educational treason by treating the study of our constitutional government as static, just to justify merely embedding superficial coverage of it in the social studies curriculum of public schools? Can't you hear eternity calling? Pass this bill. Thank you for your attention. Good luck on your deliberations.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Is there anyone else online or in the committee room that would like to testify to this bill? Seeing none, testimony is closed.
Madam Chair.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And I guess I would like to ask the sponsor where on page 2, line 25 and 26, it's a curriculum segment that is a requirement before you get a high school diploma. What is that? What is the definition of a curriculum segment in here? Is that a year class, a semester class, a portion of a civics class? What's the meaning of that terminology?
Representative Seaton, through the chair. That is not defined in the law intentionally in the bill. That's left up to the superintendent in the local school district.
Thank you, Representative Keller. Excuse me, Representative Keller, we may have a few more questions, so you might want to stand by. Representative Reinvold.
I just wanted to say thank you. I'm a co-sponsor on the bill. I think this is absolutely very, very important. We have so many hours in the classroom every year. This certainly is worthy of part of that time. So thanks for bringing this forward.
Representative Sadler.
No, withdraw.
Representative Wilson.
Madam Chair, I would like to move House Bill number 31, Version A, out of committee with individual recommendation and the fiscal note.
Madam Chair, I'd like to object for a little more discussion.
Representative Seaton, go ahead. We've got a couple, few more minutes. Let's go.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to go back to previous testimony or previous discussions we had on the bill. As I'm hearing it now, we're talking about the documents themselves and the understanding of those, not of the values and the morals of the people at the time at which the documents were drawn up, because that would have included slavery, indentured servitude, women not having the right to vote. That didn't, you know, I'm glad to see the Bill of Rights is in here now, because that wasn't included. So I wanted to make sure that we had on the record that we're talking about the documents and what they contain, not just the philosophies of the people that created the documents.
Through the Chair, Representative Seaton, I have no idea what previous testimony you're talking about. This is the first time we've heard the bill this session. Last session, there was another bill
I believe it also included the Bill of Rights. I just don't know how to explain it again, but to say I do not understand the distinction between the values and the morals of the people involved and the values that we find in the seminal documents. What I'm getting at in the bill, like I read, is the values that you find in these documents related to human government.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, and the will of the committee?
Move.
Shall we move this bill onward? Oh, I'm sorry. Would you remove your objection, Representative?
I'll remove my objection.
Thank you. Seeing no objection, this bill passes out of committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to the committee.
With that, House Education Committee, we'll do that after. We'll meet again this coming Friday, and we're now adjourned.